Thank you, sir. My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic. I got a home group. It's called The Firing Line. We meet Baltimore, Maryland, 7 p.m. on Tuesday nights. I got a sponsor. He's sitting right there. And I'm a very, very fortunate man. Hardest thing that I've gone through in recovery. Well, 6 years sober, I hit a bottom that I didn't know was possible to hit without drinking. As a result of a lifestyle that I was being driven to live by a condition that I hadn't fully conceded to having. And as a result of starting to walk back through this process that we've been hearing about getting going this weekend, it was revealed to me that there was a lot of work in 8 and 9 that I had never done. So before I go further, if you're here or thinking about or talking about or knowing that there's a lot of work in 8 and 9 that you haven't done, and you're scared to do it, I'd love to talk to you. Because my life has been transformed. But one of the hardest things in my whole life that has happened about halfway through that process, right when the book told me I was going to be amazed. The FBI showed up in my life. Now, I had to walk away from my work life because what I was doing was not right. And the way that I was making money and the way that I was treating people and living was just wrong. And as I started walking through the amends process, my now wife and I, who's here, who I hope you all get to meet, were on a trip, and we were going and seeing multiple different people. And we actually had just left a retreat 5 minutes from Bill's house. And we drove down to Maryland, and we went to bed that night. I woke up the next morning, and I was going to make two direct amends. My best friend, Jack Christensen, who died of an overdose, his older brother, and a young woman named Lauren. And I got a phone call as I was sitting in on awakening that night, that morning, and the phone call said, there's five FBI agents in your father's living room, and they have a federal arrest warrant with your name on it. And I said, what? And my heart sunk, and I went, I grabbed Cleo, and we prayed, and I started freaking out, and I started calling my sponsor, and he got on the phone with some people, and we started walking through this. We started walking through this. So let's just talk about just this day for a moment. This moment of driving to five FBI agents. I'm a guy that before I got to AA, I was worried about $40 a day. I don't know anything about the FBI. That's not my story. You know what I'm saying? I was in between like the $20 and $60 a day range of drinking or whatever else was going on. I don't know anything about the Federal Bureau of Investigation except for television shows. Like, I don't know that I'm about to get taken to an undisclosed location for real and put into some place that I don't know where I am for real, and that they're going to have to go through processes and ask me questions, and if I answer, I can't answer, and if I need to know to answer, and who am I going to answer, and what. I have no idea what's going on. All I know to do is to ask God, what do I say now? What do I say now as they're pulling me out of the car and putting me in handcuffs? And what do I say now as I'm walking in to get an interview? And what do I say now as I'm getting taken into processing? And what do I say now as I'm standing there looking at the love of my life in the eyes and I can see the fear? But I tell you that amidst that fear, looking at my father and looking at Cleo and looking at these newfound friends, that there was a stillness underneath it that is, I can't touch, but is so real. Because it became very clear as I walked back through the steps that I became willing to go to any lengths for Victor over alcoholism. Because alcoholism with no alcohol involved was killing me. And in that moment, that admission of that willingness, you're going to show up and take this or you're going to run. I'll never forget my dad saying, I wouldn't have blamed you if you wouldn't have showed up, man. You know, like, very matter-of-fact guy. I know. There's no choice in the matter. It was as clear as day. So we go down, we go for processing, and what's going on? I'm sitting in, and I'm the type of guy that I haven't been arrested in a long time. So I'm in shorts, flip-flops, and a t-shirt. I got ankle shackles on with no socks. Not feeling great. So I'm like asking the guard for help. They don't even want to help you so much. But what happens is like I'm sitting in there all I know to do is it's all I know to do. I've been programmed. I'm sitting in there and there's two other guys in a holding cell and I just start asking them about them. I just start directing my attention to the only other two people that I got while continuously just asking God, is this real? Is this real? Is this real? Is this real? And I'm shaking inside. My little leg's shaking right now, but I was vibrating. And at the same time, in the same moment, was God quiet, still, with this just powerful, booming, resounding, clear-cut path of like, you didn't actually think that this was going to be it, but this is it, man. And it's funny because that's where I went when that topic was said. But if we're going to be honest about what's happened as a result of that, I'll tell you what, 2 minutes and 49 seconds certainly is not enough time to talk about that. But I got some folks here that would love to talk to you about it. That we drove down here together with from Maryland now, where we've been living ever since that day. That are members of a home group that was created as a result of that day. That have been taken through the steps by a man who was a different person as a result of that day. So is it really the hardest thing I've gone through? I don't know. It's obviously the first thing that comes to mind because I'm still awaiting sentencing. Because I pled guilty 2 years ago and I'm still waiting to know what happens with simultaneous the understanding that whatever happens is perfect. Standing knee to knee, crying in my sponsor's barn today with the absolute clarity after reading inventory that there is nothing, nothing that's bigger than God and that God can't do. But I wouldn't mind if they gave me Don Landis' number for restitution because mine's a lot bigger than that. Talking about 80K, I'm talking about, Don, sell me that. How do I get that? I'll take 80K, bro, in a heartbeat. But I can't. I got to make that joke because, of course, I'm not scared about paying back. God knows what. I don't know. But what type of joy and beauty has come from that day? I'm sitting in that little, when you're in there, you got, like, they take you to this little thing. You're sitting on this little metal stool about to sign your life away on some little piece of metal. And where they slide your papers under, and there's, like, four grates, and you can't even see who's on the other side. And as I went back to the steps this time, my sponsor and I talked very clearly about the word all and how it showed up twice in step eight and how this was no longer a game about actually cleaning up my past. Or just being right about what people in AA were doing or whose program was good. It was no longer about that. And I'm sitting on this little piece of metal, and the way that the light is hitting this little thing where I'm going to have to sign whoever's going to arraign me to, the U.S. Marshals document or whatever, someone had been sitting in there with some piece of metal carving something into this tiny little piece of metal. And I sat there for 5 minutes, and there was only three letters I could see. And they were A-L-L. I'm in a 5x5 piece of cement. And God is so real, and this process is so powerful, that a message was delivered in there. No one moved. I came to see that it was the word Allah, and that for 5 minutes all I could see was A-L-L. But God gave me that message. Thank you for letting me share.
Ashley, you're up.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. Nice to hear that live after several years. My sobriety date is the 30th of December, 2006. I'm real fond of that date, so I don't plan on giving it up anytime soon. And I have a home group. It's called the Beacon Group. We meet online Monday through Fridays at 12 Eastern. It's real dynamic. We're solution-based. Someone reads from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and shares on the step for a half hour. Then we break into small rooms And I would love to have you join us. We also have a speaker on three speakers on Wednesday nights. I have a sponsor, and I also sponsor women, and I believe in the steps, the traditions, and the concepts of service. And I'm going to share about two things. Excuse me. The first has to do with, and they really pertain with emotional sobriety as well as physical sobriety from alcohol. The first is that I had a 14-year relationship with a man, and in many ways it was a very good relationship. You know, certainly on the outside it looked great, and it was a very loving relationship in many ways. And I felt that spiritually I was dying. And because I had learned that the great reality was inside of me and that I could trust the God of my understanding. And that in step three, when I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care, which is the very operative word for me, care to this higher power of my understanding, I stood autonomous with that higher power. And so when I had a dream that I was drowning in this marriage, I chose to close it. And we did that with a lot of dignity, a lot of tenderness, and a lot of respect. And that's a longer story, but we went to the place where we got married, and we closed our marriage there together on our 10-year wedding anniversary. And we rewrote our vows as to what it would look like to be chosen family. And then he got somebody knocked up. And we, it was an unintended pregnancy, and we continued, I always made him very welcome at our home in Tennessee. And so he came home, and he was like, somebody's pregnant. And then he said, will you be the godmother? And I thought to myself, I've got one chance to speak from my higher self and respond in the way that I will have wanted to. And I said, of course I will be, and you're going to be a wonderful father. And then I went and I called my brother-in-law, who's actually sponsored by Steve, and cussed the pain off his voicemail, went straight to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and shared. And then I got on with the business of completely coming undone. Because I had this old idea about what our values were, about how we had chosen not to have children, and there were specific social reasons for that. And I ended up wet and naked in a bathtub in New York City, just snot-slinging, crying, absolutely dropping my basket. And for whatever reason, it was just very wounding for me. And I had my support folks on a voice speakerphone, and it was Toby, who's a spiritual giant, I think, in this program, and a couple other people. And what Toby said to me is, Ashley, in this moment, there is no meeting. There is no step. There's no line from the book. It's down to your higher power and you. And what is your answer to be? And I got out of that bathtub and I laid myself out on the bathroom floor, wet and naked in a posture of total surrender. And I just let it all go, the old ideas, everything. And all I know to tell you is that it worked, you know. Something about that surrender just worked, and I let it all go, and I was able to peel myself up off the floor and get myself dressed and the hair brushed and the gown put on and go to a work event that was a very public event. And I have pictures from that night, and you couldn't tell that I had been the crumpled piece of Kleenex that I had previously been just moments earlier. So that was something difficult where the solution of Alcoholics Anonymous really got me through. The other story I wanted to share is that on the 5th of February in 2021, I was walking in the rainforest in the Central African rainforest, and I tripped and I fell, and my leg broke in four places, and I sustained severe nerve damage, and my foot was paralyzed. And the long version of the story is that because of where I was in this exceedingly remote place to which it takes days to travel through multiple modes of locomotion, including walking for hours to get there. It was 67 hours before I received medical attention, including any kind of pain medicine. Four broken bones. And I laid on the rainforest floor for 5 hours before a man named Papa Jean came and took a leg that was misshapen and looked like a boomerang and kind of snapped some of the bones back into place so I could be transported on a makeshift hammock to start the transport, which would eventually include 6 hours on the back of a motorbike with two men holding me up so in case I passed out and fell off, I wouldn't lose my leg entirely. And what I want to tell you about this story is that the spirit of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was with me. Can I see that? And that I knew in my body no one could do this pain for me. And believe me, it was pain. Like back arching, animal riding, stick biting, flame shooting out of my head pain. But I knew that these people were sitting with me and that it was like the we of the first step. I knew that I wasn't alone. And when my friend Dieu Merci sat on his haunches for 5.5 hours, holding my leg up so that the bones didn't rattle around, and he was perfectly still, and his eyes welled with compassion, I knew that my higher power was showing up with skin on, just like we say in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then when my friend said, oh, it's 30 minutes until Martin is back, it's 15 minutes until Martin is back, it's almost time for Martin to be back, I said, you know what, honey? I can't have any expectations that should be familiar to members. I can't have any expectations of when I'm going to get help, if I'm going to get help, what that help is going to look like, because those will just break my heart. And then I thought about my higher power concept, and what I believe is that my higher power suffers with me. And that was enough. And eventually I was transported through the forest for an hour and a half, and I laid in camp. Oh, let me tell you this. They put me on a cot in camp, and they hadn't adjusted the legs, and the cot collapsed. Almost funny. Not really, but almost funny. And then Papa Jean had to reset my leg again. I thought I was only going to have that adventure once. And Martin just wrapped his arms around my neck, and we looked into each other's eyes, and we bellowed together because I didn't have to do it alone. And then when I got to the village, we decided that someone needed to ride, as I said, on the back of the motorbike with me. And Martin said, no la toca, which is the local booze that they drink. He wanted somebody sober. Crickets. Crickets. And then I spoke up, and I said, I want a man of God. Where did that come from? And my friend Maradona, he said, je vais, I go. And he rode with me. And then someone said to me, Ashley, you need la toca. You need a painkiller. And I recoiled as if from a hot flame. I reacted sanely and normally because the problem has been solved. And those 10-step promises were just with me. It was not a choice. There was no way I was going to drink because I knew I would come to a future meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I would be accountable to you. And I would say to a newcomer, there's nothing worth drinking over. There's nothing a drink will make better. And I wasn't going to say to someone, this program doesn't work, because I'm living proof that it does. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share a little bit on the question. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we have Bill next.
I'm bringing this. You're my backbone, but this is the roots. Okay, I'm Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. Just this little bit. There we go. My sobriety date is January 28th, 1989. And I can only tell you that it's because of people like you that I'm sober today. And my story tonight, my gosh, this kind of blindsided me. And it's not about my dad standing at the jail cell telling me I'm crazy after being arrested for a felony. It just isn't. You know, I didn't know I was in the realms of alcoholism big time. Those things, there's so many of those stories in my story that none of them are the worst. The worst came in sobriety. And I'm gonna back it up a little bit. First, my home group is in Corning, New York. It's a Corning Big Book study group. We study the book a paragraph at a time every Sunday. We have a speaker once a month. I am now a damn Yankee. I live in Greenville, Tennessee. That's my home. And I will have a home group here soon. But this Greenville, Tennessee, is part of the vision that came with my worst time. I met a woman in 1975, and we met pretty actively. You know, back in 75, things were pretty crazy, and we hit it off, and we were together for 43 years. We got married in a young age. Well, not that young, but it was 1980. 1981, I was in my first rehab. She was there, side by side. And her addiction, my addiction, we just flourished through the years, but I managed to get sober at a certain point and walk through this program and stay with this program, and you taught me how to live with that relationship. I didn't need to run from it. I was a part of it. We had three glorious children, and it just, life was wonderful. It really was, even though the ups and downs, as it talks about in our book, nothing's perfect. We heard it all tonight. You know, Jennifer, yeah, my gosh, you know, keep banging your head against the wall. Sooner or later, your head's going to get sore. You'll put another body part against it, I guess. But I can tell you that it wasn't easy. And in 2014, I had my biggest spiritual awakening of all, and I'm going to tell you about this because I had spiritual awakenings, and as Bill talks about it on page 12, you know, for the moment, and then how blind I had been. You know, worldly clamors took over, and away I went. I had the white light moment. It was in 1981, my first rehab. But what happened to me in that 2014 was something was missing. My soul was missing. I had a hole in my chest as big as this room, and I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. I had different sponsors through the years. I had all these things. I was going to AA, and I was being the whatever, and I could sponsor a guy, and I'd get to a point, and I wouldn't know what to do. I got nothing for you, and it was scaring me. And all of a sudden, God does some amazing, amazing work. I'm at a meeting, and this woman says to me, Bill, would you like a CD? I've never listened to it. And I said, I'd love one. Boom. I put the CD in. It's the third step. Well, KDP was the third step. Some of you know her, some of you don't. Well, her husband, Charlie, is my sponsor since that, pretty much that day. But to fast forward, that changed my life. That's when this book got opened. And now the pages are falling out of it. It was on my shelf collecting dust, and today it gets used every day. And we practice these principles in all my affairs the best I can. So now I'm going to fast forward, and what this all has done for me is give me the ability to walk through some of the hardest time of my life, which was my wife dying from this disease. And I can only tell you that there's certain people in this room that I could put the light on, because the light's on them still, that walked me through some of the hardest times of my life. And I can't tell you that, put my finger on one point that saved me through that, because I'm a runner, man. I'm not going to let anybody know what's going on with me. I'm the double actor. I'm the guy 60 to 63. I'm all those things. And I still can be all those things. But the principles and going through those 10-step promises that Ashley touched on, oh, my God. I didn't even know what that 10th step was. I got to talk about what was going on with Bill. Hey, January 1st, first year, my wife was passed. I'm freaking crashing and burning. I mean, I am really down. Pick up the phone. Wow, pick up the phone. That's different. Call my sponsor. I said, Charlie, I'm dying here. I went all day in misery with this thing, because that was our anniversary of meeting each other, January 1st. He still tells from the podium it was the best 10th step he ever did. He handed the phone to Katie. He gave it the phone to someone with the experience that I was having. And she walked me right out of that darkness back into the light. You know, the Father of Light presides over us. It says it in the book. And it's so true. But I didn't have this clue that inside this, the soul that was missing was the humanness of what you folks were telling me all along, is to get right with me, the Creator, do this work and stay with it and perform it well, fit myself to help someone else. It's not about me. I was living life about me. Today it isn't. And that's all as a result of working these steps, you people, traveling all over the countryside, hugs from Dane. I'm in Greenville, Tennessee, for crying out loud. Do you think Bill Stewart had anything to do with that? This God shined a light here 3 years ago, and Bill said, wow, I love this place. And here I am. Wake up on a Saturday morning, well, there's the house. Done. God comes up my driveway. Not God, but these people came up my driveway in New York. We love your home. The house is full of life now. And that's what it was always supposed to be. God loaned me that home to raise my family for 20-some years. I built it. Pond, deer running around the whole 9 yards. My dog and I went down the driveway. Kids were frolicking, the dogs were running, and the place was alive with life. I got to pray with those new owners in my family room. I can't make this up. You know, we've all just talked about God here tonight and what he's doing for us, what I couldn't do for myself. And he'll drag me into places. And I'm a hard learner. God makes it that way, I think, sometimes. You know, yesterday was one of those examples. I won't get into it, but everything just went bam, bam, bam. Just like, I couldn't have done this. And it just happens. And then Dane and Rhonda show up, and Jack, or not Jack, but Peter, and we have lunch. You know, I did a day's work before they showed up, and life was good. I can't make it up. I just can't. I'm really blessed to have Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm even more blessed to have this God of my understanding that I never knew. I had no idea. It's ours, it's yours, and we're united here. We did the Our Father tonight, and it rocketed me. How long has it been since you grabbed somebody's hand and said the Our Father and felt that gyration? That's the deal. That's the deal. That's why I'm here. Yeah, it's that light, and I'll stay in it. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, the next topic is going to be your two most powerful amends. And we'll start with Jack.
Y'all got some great, great topics, man. Yeah, Jack, alcoholic. And it's really cool to be up here with both of you. Thanks for sharing. Two most powerful amends. Before I go into them, I just want to say I'm really grateful there's a lot more than two. Because there is. I got a long list to choose from. That's the truth. I don't know which two to pick. And I feel really fortunate that that's the truth in my heart. I'm talking about one from 2 weeks ago, I guess. We'll start there. There was three of us that grew up together. And who kind of went down a road where we all, at some point, probably could have ended up hanging out with each other in here, you know? But we went three different ways to get sober. I ended up coming to see y'all, thank God. One of my buddies was able to kind of like go back to school and somehow manage something that I was never able to manage. And my other buddy went into the military. And his name was Jack, too. And he was the youngest of three sons, too. And I was living in Los Angeles, being a big shot. And one of the last times he called me, I didn't answer the phone. Sad to say, but it's because I thought, you know, he wanted something from me. Because that's the guy I am at 4 or 5 years sober. Untreated, that's the guy I am, period. And And what happens is I get a phone call a few months later, and Jack had been home on a trip visiting Maryland. He had been stationed in Georgia, and they found him at a rest stop, and he hadn't been breathing for like over an hour or something. And it just is different. It was, you know, he got taken, and he was on life support for 10 or 11 days. I flew home right away, and this is a different amends than the ones that I have been walked through out of the big book with the direction of a sponsor, because this one started this day. I flew home terrified because I was about to walk into a hospital waiting room in the shock trauma unit at Hopkins Hospital, downtown Baltimore, and I was going to have to walk through probably 17 to 23 people who knew that I was one of the only people in the world that ever did with this young man what he was dying from. And I was terrified. There was no conversations to be had. There was a God to trust and a path to walk. So before I could get there, I sent Panera to the nurses and to the family. Just something to make it easier. And as I walked in, I said hi to who wanted to say hi, and I didn't to who didn't. And I just went and sat next to this man for hours every day for 7 or 8 days and held his hand as they eventually had to make the call to take him off life support. And I just tried to demonstrate to his parents and to his brothers and to his aunts and to his uncles and to his cousins that Alcoholics Anonymous can change people. And I'm really sorry for the life that we lived, but that I'm here right now. And 2 weeks ago, 6 years later, his mother finally allowed me to walk back into their home and have a conversation with her. And, you know, one of the biggest questions she wanted to know was, why do you think my son died and you guys didn't? And thank God for some intuition and the ability to just say, I have no answer for that, and I'm just really sorry. And it's just really sad. But then the conversation continued, and I was able to acknowledge some things, and she was able to just talk and ask questions that 6 years later provided her some freedom and pieces of closure on something that I know nothing about. But pieces came back in that house. Something happened in there, just a little bit of understanding of what was happening before that happened and what maybe had been driving some stuff and what maybe happened when we were younger. And God bless Jack Christensen and God bless that family. Drew Weston. I moved to Los Angeles and started this company that was a sham, that was healthcare fraud, is what the FBI would tell you it is. They're rather black and white. That's how they have it listed on the charging documents. And this young man, I had the idea to use his last name in the name of helping people, and got permission from his family to do so. Because he had passed away. And at one point, I had taken him through the steps and tried to sponsor him. Because I'm that guy, man. I don't care about AA's name. I'm not worried about unity. I don't care about the church. This is about, I got an agenda, man. I got stuff to do. There's a good motive behind it. Let's go. There's no pause. There's no sponsorship. None of it matters. Because I just run through the world, and I will, and I run through AA the same way, especially when I'm right. And what happens is, as we've talked about already in the first 10-minute segment we've spent together, right? Company didn't end so well. Huh? Entire sects of the city of Alcoholics Anonymous hated that name because that's what they knew our name as. I tarnished this man's family's name in a city where they had relatives based out of my necessity and want to line my pockets with money by using human beings as the vehicle to do so. And so as a result of going back through the steps, I end up, again, thank God for having a sponsor who has had experience and the willingness to ask when not, and just someone to walk through. Because I end up at an amends with an ex-girlfriend of his. And she's the one that wakes me up to the fact that I thought she was going to be upset about the way I treated her. And all she wants to talk about is what I did to this man's family's name. Because I'm 40 amends in, and I'm still sitting with this person, and I have no idea why I'm sitting there. And I'm really glad that I'm getting more clear that every time I go somewhere, I still don't know why I'm there. And she says, I mean, yeah, you did that, and like, but like, let's talk about this young man's no longer with us. And, you know, came out of there and called my sponsor, and he's not shocked that I got told something that I didn't know. he's not very surprised, but I was at that man's grave the next day. I wept. You know, I wept having a conversation with a spirit of an individual. You know, I was moved. That was one of the most powerful experiences I've had in amends. And if you'd have looked at me in the three-dimensional world, I was sitting there alone. My wife Cleo and I went back there on the anniversary of his death. We did it again this year, but we did it the next year after that. And we introduced him to her. She's standing there in tears. It's insane. And I never thought there would ever be anything available there for that. As soon as she brought that to me, I was just like, oh. And from that came the direct intuition that we needed to see his brother, that we needed to see his mother, that we needed to see his father. And we were able to go back to his grave March 6th and send some messages to his family as we were on our way out there and sit down with him and spend a little bit of time with him. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, God.
Yeah. I know y'all wanted to know what his charge was, didn't you? I was like, man, I'm gonna have to ask after this. But anyway, Ashley, you're next.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. Hi, y'all. I'm gonna wait for the timer. So, I was thinking, at first I heard, what is the hardest amends I've ever made? And I thought, well, if I haven't done step eight properly, then it is a hard amends. But if I've done step eight well, then it's not really hard because I've become entirely willing. But then I heard it correctly that it's a powerful amends, yes. And so I took a cue from Al-Anon, and when I did my step eight, you know, made a list of all persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, I did my list in three columns. The first column was, if the person were to walk through the door right now, I'm willing to make my amends. My spirit is easy. I'm willing. The second column is, I'm not totally willing just yet, but I know I'll get there. I'll pray about it, read the book a little, talk to my sponsor, and I'll get there. And the third is the... not no, hell no, that column. And guess where my parents were? Column three. You know, and Bill talks in the book about the warped lives of blameless children who grew up in alcoholism, and that was me. You know, I grew up in the kind of house where when the police came because of the violence and they left, I was on the front porch wondering why they didn't take me with them. And I am going to talk about violence and rape, so please take care of yourself. I was molested for the first time that I remember when I was 7, when I was raped twice when I was 15. My mom said, I heard about you and your boyfriend. My mother was absolutely clueless about violence, and it is no child's responsibility to protect herself from exploitation. So when it was suggested to me that maybe I had something for which to make amends to my parents, this was pretty enraging. And I was already a very rageful person. Some of y'all might be a little irritable. I was raging. And I was even told that my rage preceded me before I walked into a room, which I found rather angering. And, you know, over time, it was actually a good fourth step, and giving it away in a fifth step, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous helped me separate out the things for which I had not been responsible as a child, where I was that blameless, needy, vulnerable, dependent child growing up in the family disease, and then the things for which I could take responsibility as an adult, that helped me separate out where I could take responsibility for the things I had carried as an adult and the behaviors on which I had acted out toward my parents, like carrying the rage when, you know, I was squandering the hours that might have otherwise been worthwhile, as it says in the fourth step in our book. So I became willing to make amends to my mom, and I would think, oh, is tonight the night? And then they'd have the news on, or I'd think, oh, is now the time? But we'd be watching a ball game, and one night she came over, and I had all my literature books in a basket, and she said, why do you do all that recovery stuff? And I said, because it makes me feel good. And I said, do you mind if I read you something? And I read her a page from a book that I like, and I said, Mom, I just want to offer you my heartfelt amends for any and all wrongs I may have done. And I kept it real global like that because that's the approach that I wanted to take at the time. And I'll be gosh darned if that woman didn't start to cry so hard. I mean, she began to weep and weep and weep. And she got on her knees and crawled over to where I was sitting and laid herself across my lap. And she said, honey, I had no idea. I had no idea. And what she meant is that she had no idea how difficult it was for me as a child. And she ended up spontaneously making her amends to me for having an untreated and undiagnosed mental illness, for leaving me alone when I was in the 10th grade. And when I mean alone, I lived alone for an entire school year without any adult, without any caregiver, without a neighbor looking in on me. No teacher noticed. No one from Child Protective Services showed up. I lived alone because my mother went on the road and left me. She made amends for all of that because I became willing to take responsibility for the rage I had carried as an adult. And today, she and I have a great relationship, you know. We hang out, we do all kinds of stuff. You know, she hugs me and tells me I'm an extraordinary woman, and I'm able to accept the love she's capable of giving me today. And I don't want to miss out on that. So that was the willingness of step eight that gave me back the mom that that alcoholism and mental illness robbed me of when I was a child. And the same is true with my dad. When I had my accident, my dad was the one I called, and he flew halfway around the world to be with me. And for the second half, I want to flip it and talk about an amends that I received, because Alcoholics Anonymous has also taught me how to receive a heartfelt amends. So I was raped in 1998 by someone I had known since the first grade. And we had a long friendship, you know, and I knew his family. I was real friendly with his brother. And after the rape, I didn't have any contact with him, but I'd always wondered if we could have a restorative justice process, because there had been so much relationship over so many years. And I was going to be going to his state last fall. And I have the sponsee who says, God will either bless it or block it. And so I started processing this with my partner, with my outside help, with my sponsor, and things started to fall into place. His phone number came to me. I reached out to him. He responded. I asked if he might be willing to get together. He was enthusiastic. We found an agreed-upon place. He came over to where I was staying. We were sitting in rocking chairs overlooking the woods in Kentucky. And we conversed for about 45 minutes, and believe me, I was all prayed up. But after those 45 minutes, I went into the bathroom and got on my knees and prayed again. And when I went back out, I said, you know, I was wondering if you'd be willing to talk about what happened the last time we saw each other. Got very grave, and he said, yes, I would. And I said, I'm wondering what story you've carried all these years. And he started to tell me the story from his point of view. And he talked about relationship and time that we had spent together and how much we shared. Then he came up to the assault, and he stopped. And then I told the story going forward. And when I was done talking about the assault, he said, Ashley, I did not see you, and I did not hear you. And I have deep remorse and deep regret. And I am so sorry, and I know that will never be good enough. And obviously I'm condensing this, but this was a long conversation. And I reflected back to him everything that I heard him say, including, I did not hear you, I did not see you, I have deep remorse, I have deep regret. I'm so sorry, and I know this will never be good enough. And because of the thoroughness of our talk, and because I have done my work, and I know about forgiveness, and I know that I went to him, and I needed absolutely nothing from him. If I was able to say, you did not have my consent, that would have been nice, but I didn't need anything from him. I had no expectations. I just wanted to have the opportunity to be in dialogue and conversation. And if he had been a total jerk, rapey, you know what, I would have been able to handle that because I'm a badass, empowered woman in recovery. And what I was able to end up saying to him was, it is good enough, and I accept your apology. And we carried on with our conversation, and he said, I'm eager for you to meet my family. I said, I can't wait for you to meet Martin. And we exchanged from our childhood places of chosen family, I love you, I love you. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a man who'd just gotten out of prison and went to make amends to the mother of the person he had killed in vehicular homicide when he was drunk. I know that miracles take place in this program, and I'm really glad that I get to be a part of those miracles today. Thank you.
Bill Zeger, yeah. Come on over here.
I just know your mind's not working too fast tonight, Ben. I get it. I love this guy. He's been picking on me for 3 days. I'm Bill. I'm still an alcoholic. I do have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. I sponsor. There's the fellowship will grow around you is a promise. And believe me, I'm living it. And it's so powerful. It's unbelievable. And this is a tough question because there's the courage to say what I want to say, and I've never told this. I made amends to a man who spent his life in prison from my actions. And I made amends to that man. And I sat with him. And we talked and we talked. And I actually would go see him in prison. And that's the hardest that I've ever had to make, but the results were incredible. He's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, still in prison, and I go behind the walls, and it's where I get a lot of my best spiritual moments are behind those walls with those men. That's short and sweet. Now comes the long one, and I have a few that weren't too easy to do, but this one I think needs to be told because in our book, it tells us about the first approach. And once again, it goes back to my wife. I spent more lifetime with her than I have with anyone in my life. My parents, they were all gone at an early age. We've been together forever. And it tells us that we probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. I sat with my wife. She wasn't a spiritual giant by any means. She was a science brain, and that's where she lived. But she was sober when she died, but she was starting to gain some spiritual stuff just from the people that were coming around the home. Anyway, I went in the living room, and I tell you, I've been a hardhead all my life. You know, I was a guy that big construction worker, ran the show, being that you do this, boom, boom, boom. And I did run the household that way. And that, you know, that's a big change for someone like myself. And I sat with her in the living room. I said, listen, I know I need to make amends to you. I've harmed you in many ways, and I'd like to make it right. And I don't know how to make it right at this point. And I'd really like to discuss this with you in length, but I said, can we just give it some time? And the fountains just opened. And she said, yes, no problem. Unfortunately, I didn't get to make amends to her while she was alive. I mean, things just turned south fast. So my sponsor and I, we talked about it, and I wrote the letter. as it tells us in the book. You write the letter. Well, I wrote this letter. I wrote two letters. I wrote one letter about the joy of our life, our 43 years together. The other letter was my amends. And I was at the gravesite. And it's really no fun to see your own name on a gravestone. I'm going to tell you right now, it's one thing to see, you know, here's half your, better than half your life, 43 years. I'm 67. I mean, I was a grasshopper, right? And there's my name there, too. It's like, but now I'm living the dash, as my friend Dane and Rhonda talk about. I'm living in this dash. So I write the letter. In the letter, we have this with Charlie and all this lineage goes back to Mark Houston, and we have 3x5 cards, and it says, I'm here to, you know, make it right. I've harmed you. I'd like to make it right. And there's a list of things we do. And we also ask, how did it make you feel? Well, I read this letter, and one of my, not the major amends, but an amends that's always stood out, and one I'd like to really bring to the podium, is that we were fairly young, and my wife loved the arts. She was a very intelligent woman, and she just loved art. She loved dance. She loved ballet. She loved it all. And we had decided that we were going to do ballroom dancing. I said, yeah, all right. You know, I get in the ballroom dancing, and I just went to self big time. It's like, I know he's hitting on her. I don't want to be here. This is no fun, blah, 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 and I blew it up. You know, we just never went again. Big regrets for that. You know, this is something she loved. And I'm talking about this at the gravesite. I'm saying, I know I harmed you, and I'd like to make it right. And how can I make this right? And anyone that does two-way prayer, does 11th step, or really listens to God, because we ask all the way through this book, but I think we're supposed to listen after we ask, just not keep driving the train. And that's what I've learned that I never knew before. So I asked the question. I said, I harmed you. How can I make this right? And she said, Bill, learn to dance. Oh, simple enough, learn to dance. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say to me? Yeah. Learn to love the art of dance. I'm thinking, wow, okay. Now comes all the punchlines to this. This God of our understanding has just thrown things at me like you just can't imagine. I meet this lovely woman, and our first conversation, she used to be a dance instructor. She's sitting in the front row now. I said, okay, God, you got a sense of humor. And so we're working on that part of it all. But one of the most, and this is really fresh to me, because through COVID, we had tickets to go see a dance show in my hometown before COVID. It's been postponed, it's been postponed, it's been postponed. Well, and fortunately there's someone smarter than me in this room that reminded me this date that the show now is March 29th, and that's the anniversary of my wife's death. I can't make that up. There's just so much that comes from the power of making an amends, whether that person's gone or they're standing eye to eye. I've been thrown out of offices. I've been to the man you hate. You know, I've made amends. I had to make amends to my best man. And it was 44 years old or longer. I don't even know. And I made those amends. And the power that comes from it all, I'm free. And that's not really my goal when I go in there. It's to obviously give them an understanding that I know I turned your world upside down. I turned my mother's, my father's world upside down. I was the root of the problem. The amends, the cash register amends I made to my father when I was in rehab, it was the last time I saw him. It was July 5th, 1981. He died October 6th, 1981. I made friggin' amends for cash register. Since then, I've written a letter for destroying, for the guy that stood in front of that jail cell. told me I was crazy and then mortgaged his house to get me out. He was right. I was crazy. He should have left me there. I got to tell you, this has been an honor. Thank you, Ashley, Ben, and my good friend here, Jack. I got to get my arms moving, though. Jack is the best at it. You know, I love Jack. We go back. And thanks again. Thank you.